Government contracting can be a very useful tool for enhancing social and economic changes that Congress deems worthy. Contracting veteran Tim Sullivan has authored the blog 10 Myths of Government Contracting. I've been exploring these myths with him in a series of interviews. Today, Sullivan tackles the penultimate myth, number 9, only the big guys succeed. That myth seems easy to debunk given the amount of small business contracting the federal government does, but not everyone reads past the headlines of big awards.
The news we hear about is always about the big awards, right, to the major companies whose names are household names to most of us. And if you drill down in those awards and find out who's on the team, you'll see that they are stacked with small and women-owned and minority-owned businesses on their team because of the social and economic goals that are driven by the statutes and the regulations that govern government contracting. And so the Lockheeds of this world, when they win, they've got a small business subcontracting plan in there, and they've got plenty of small businesses on their team in these things. That's just one way that this business is different from the commercial world.
Plus, there are several federal GWACs, government-wide acquisition vehicles, that focus only on small businesses, even though there might be a large business counterpart to the same vehicle, but they have divisions, so to speak, like Alliant.
Absolutely.
An Alliant Small Business.
Yeah, they set these aside for small businesses or 8A or small businesses, which is a niche within the small business world. And it's a sheltered environment under which or through which these companies compete over the next several years of their multiple award indefinite delivery, indefinite quantity contracts. They compete just against other small businesses. But even in those situations, they are allowed to subcontract about, let's say, 49% of their work to companies that are not small. We call that other than small businesses. So we see frequently the Boeings and the Lockheeds of this world courting small businesses because they want teaming partners going ahead when they see these restricted competitions come out.
Now, there is a lot of information in the federal acquisition regulation concerning small business. If you are a small business or think you might qualify as one or minority-owned or one of the socioeconomic categories, what parts of the FAR should you really get familiar with?
Well, FAR Part 19 is the starting point with the small business programs. But if you go from FAR Part 19 through 26, you'll see what we call the socioeconomic programs. That is the labor issues, the small business issues, and those kinds of things. But you start at FAR Part 19, and that lays out the framework for the small business world of contracting. But that's just the first step. And by the way, learning about any business by reading the regulations is a challenge. And although I think it's very important for companies who are in this sector, in this world, to read the regulations, they mean a lot more when you have some facts to set aside, to set alongside the regulations so you understand what's going on. You're probably better off to use the websites of DOD, the Small Business Administration, the Office of Federal Procurement Policy, GSA, and look at the explanatory materials they've got there about small business subcontracting and small business contracting. It's very helpful stuff and gives you a bigger picture, at which point you probably then should look at the regulations to get the details.
Now, federal contracting to a small business or to anyone starting out in it can seem a little bit like catch-22 because you have no history, there's no past performance for a contracting officer to judge, and it's very difficult to kind of get grip somewhere to find your way in. And so what, besides, as you say, you know, reading the regulations is one way, how can you get experience in this?
Well, that's a great question. It's a good point. First of all, the regulations and the statute make it very clear that a company's lack of experience can't be used against it as if you will, as a negative mark in the past performance evaluation if you're bidding on a solicitation. So the worst that's going to happen is you'll have a neutral on past performance instead of a excellent or a good. But it's not supposed to be used as a negative. That's number one. Number two, depending if you're brand new, that is a problem. And what the agencies can do is they can look at the men and women who are running that company and running this particular project if they win it. And if they come from very experienced contractors, that experience can be, if you will, transferred from their former companies to them in terms of giving this company a good past performance evaluation based on the quality and the experience of these men and women. Third, you might consider starting small, not bidding as a prime contractor, but going out there, going to the small business fairs that are run by not just the agencies, but the major prime contractors out there, networking and working your way onto some teams and hoping to get a slice of the pie with some experience that you'll build on.
We're talking with Tim Sullivan. He's a partner at Thompson Coburn. And there's a small industry itself that exists in Washington, and that is of consultants who help small businesses or newbies get into the federal market. And they seem to have a lot of success. There's an awful lot of them that seem to make good living. If you are approaching this as a business, how do you know who is a good consultant and what should you ask them to do for you?
Well, you do have to network to do that, Tom, and you have to be a smart consumer, a smart shopper. Don't just talk to one person because we all know that some people are terrific salesmen, but not so great when it comes to performance. So you got to shop and ask people and go to the websites. But again, websites can be written by some third party that just knows how to, is just a great writer. You got to meet them in person. You got to find out what their track record is and what the results are. You got to find out what the plan would be. And most importantly, you have to find out how they're going to charge you. Whether it is on a commission basis only, or they're going to charge you by project, or they're going to charge you on a monthly fixed fee plus commission, find it out up front and not be surprised, because if you're a startup or you're in your early days, you've got a very limited budget and you got to be careful here.
And if you want to succeed by approaching federal agencies directly, there's a protocol there too, correct?
There is. And I think you and I've talked about this since 911. The ability to walk into an agency and simply introduce yourself cold is very limited. So I think it's a smart idea to start with the agency SABU, the Small and Disadvantaged Business Utilization Advisor, and meet with him or her, get in touch with them, and develop a relationship with them. And not just at one agency, but at several, because the odds, the percentage of successes in your bidding track record is always going to be fairly low. You might send out 30 proposals, and if you get one, you're lucky. So you have to spread your bets and try and develop relationships with all these agencies.
And what about the industry events? That seems like a good way to connect with government. And there's enough of those too going around.
It is. Yeah, you have to do that. And there are other industry events are great, and the Army shows and the Marines, whatever they are, they're great. And Primes, again, as I mentioned, they sponsor events as well. They are looking for good small business teammates. They are always on the prowl for them. And it's just a great opportunity for you to meet people that are in this business. And there's another organization, the National Contract Management Association, which is devoted exclusively to government contracting, U.S. government contracting. It's pretty cheap to join, and they have monthly opportunities with luncheons and speakers, and you sit down at a table, and if 8 people, 10 people at a table, 4 might be from industry, 4 might be from government that you're meeting. I mean, you've got a network, and this is a good way to do it.
Now, you, Tim, are part of another industry in Washington, that is contract law and procurement attorneys. And so as a small business, how much time, how much money, how much of your revenue do you need to anticipate that you will need for legal matters? Because there are a lot of legal issues that can certainly come up in federal contracting.
Well, there are, and it's just the same thing I said that applies to finding a consultant would work on lawyers. Talk to your friends. Who have they used? What do they think of those people? Are they expensive? Go to the website. Check them out. See if there's any connectivity there, any ways that you know these folks. And then sit down with them and find out what they think they can do for you and what it's going to cost, especially what it's going to cost. But, Tom, the most important thing as a small business person, I think, is to understand when you need a lawyer and when you don't. And there are many situations where we've simply said to our clients, potential clients, you know what? You don't need us for this. You need an auditor or an accountant, an ex-DCA auditor, for example, or you need a sales consultant. We're not salespeople. And so if you can develop that kind of relationship with the people who are going to represent you as your lawyers, now you're talking about an effective relationship.
But bottom line is you don't have to be big to be successful and make some money in the federal market.
There are plenty of small businesses out there knocking it down and doing very well. But the irony, as I point out in this this myth number nine, is that if you're too successful, you're no longer small. So you've killed the goose that laid the golden egg. And companies struggle with that. They struggle with that a lot. How to stay small, or do they just bite the bullet and go out there and compete in the unrestricted market?
Or sell and start another small business.
Right. That they can do that. Now, for example, if your company is an 8A company and you sell it, you can't go out and start another small business, 8A business, I mean, because you've used up your eligibility. So your ability to replicate what you've done before could be limited by the nature of the business that you had before.